Chapter 7. For a moment, Miller was too stunned to move. Then he followed Cook through the hatch. The interior was dark, but as Miller hesitated in the hatchway, a strip of luminescence, then two more, striped down the center of the ceiling. The lights did not seem to come from any kind of tube or other source. They just came into being from the smooth gray of the ceiling. Cook leaned over a control panel, running his hands across the instruments. Some of them lit up as he touched them, emitting a shower of pings and clicks.
"Jay,"
Miller said.
How do you do that?"
"Do what?"
"The hatch,"
Miller said.
"You knew how to open it."
Still without looking up, Cook shrugged.
"Standard emergency access codes,"
he said.
"Well known. Only 32 in existence."
There was a loud pneumatic hiss from somewhere below them, and Cook turned quickly and disappeared into the bowels of the ship.
"Jay!"
Miller called, but Cook was gone. Miller could hear a series of thumps and mumbles below him somewhere, presumably on the deck below this one. He looked around the cabin. His mind was still numb, and he had trouble accepting what he saw. This was supposed to be a movie prop. Damn it, it had to be a movie prop. No other explanation was reasonable. Except that it was so real, and it seemed to be functional. And Cook had made it work. That was the worst of it. The thought that Cook might know what he was doing. Which meant, what? That the blow to his head had given him special powers that let him understand machines from the stars? That he was in telepathic communication with outer space people from the future? That his body had been taken over by an alien? No, there was a reasonable explanation. There had to be a reasonable explanation, and he would find it. He would take a cold, objective, scientific look at this thing. If it really was a spaceship, all right. But first, he would look at the hard evidence. Miller took a deep breath and began to examine the control room. Fronting the control panel were three reclining bucket seats. Centered before each seat was a large blank area, perhaps a data screen of some kind. Like the lights in the ceiling, the blank areas looked like they were made of the same material as the surrounding console, but the rest of the panel held what looked like controls, so a large blank space in the middle, logically, should be some kind of viewing screen. Besides, the screens, if that's what they were framed by a series of small indentations that might be used to control or adjust the picture. Miller stepped closer. He could now see that the center chair had a small joystick mounted on the right arm. There was no mistaking it. The pilot in Miller knew it immediately for what it was, what it had to be. This was the command seat, the place from which the craft was flown. Miller felt himself drawn closer. He reached for the stick, somehow knowing how it would feel under his hand and...
"Animal reproduction!"
Cook snarled as he blasted back up from below.
"Gone. Not present. Incorrectly located somewhere else."
Miller jerked upright. Cook appeared extremely agitated. More so than at any time since the tsunami.
"Calm down, Jay,"
he said, trying to soothe with his voice the way he would a nervous dog or horse.
"What's missing?"
Cook practically hopped with frustration.
"It,"
he said.
"Quintessential object, entire objective of presence in specific locus."
And seeing the look of blank patience on Miller's face, he added.
"The artifact."
"All right, Jay. If it's missing, we can find it. It has to be somewhere on this island, doesn't it?"
"Perhaps,"
Cook said, visibly calming a little.
"Required environment very specific, but..."
"We'll find it, Jay,"
Miller repeated, trying to calm Cook further.
"Let's just think it through, okay?"
Cook looked at Miller for a long moment. Something behind his eyes glittered. Then he laughed.
"Ha ha ha! Very good,"
he said.
"That one marks me."
"Maybe if we get a better picture of what this vessel is, we can figure out what happened to your, artifact,"
Miller said.
"Standard system shuttle,"
Cook said.
"Irrelevant to quest for artifact."
"Maybe so,"
Miller said.
"But it's extremely interesting. I'd like to study."
"Nothing worth labor-intensive study,"
Cook said.
"Merely carried artifact, vessel, nothing more. Exit craft now."
He turned and went out the hatch.
"Cook!"
It was no good. Cook was already outside. Miller bit down and took a deep breath. He wanted very badly to explore this ship, but he had to follow. Cook was clearly in no shape to wander around an unknown and possibly hostile island. And in any case, this ship, or prop, or whatever it was, wouldn't go anywhere in the next few hours. He could come back if the island proved safe. And if it wasn't safe, this thing was irrelevant, no matter how interesting. Miller followed Cook out the hatch. Cook was already striding purposefully up the path, about to disappear around a bend in the trail, when Miller climbed out of the spaceship. Miller hissed through his teeth with frustration and hurried after him.
Jay,
he said, catching up and putting a hand on Cook's shoulder.
Do you remember that we were going to be careful? Scout out the island in case there are hostile inhabitants.
Be now most important,
Cook said, shaking off Miller's hand and continuing without slowing down.
Artifact location unbearably urgent.
Miller gritted his teeth and followed.
This whole thing was spiraling wildly out of control, and Miller, if he'd ever really had it in his grasp, could feel it slipping far away from him.
Jay,
he said, trying desperately to hold on to his temper.
Can we just talk a little bit about your artifact?
Cook was silent for a long moment. He appeared to be considering Miller's request. Finally, he said,
you can't understand.
Not won't, or might not. Can't understand. As if he were a Kalahari As if he were a Kalahari bushman asking how television worked.
What does that mean, I can't understand? Damn it, are you forgetting that I'm the only one who calibrated all the instruments on Runapuake? You couldn't even read the seismograph until I...
Artifact is different,
Cook said, and he surged ahead up the path as if that settled everything. Miller closed his eyes for a few seconds, totally overcome by frustration, bottled up rage and anxiety about his friend rattling around loose on what still might turn out to be a dangerous island. He took two Tai Chi centering breaths and forced his mind and body to relax. Then he opened his eyes, feeling a little better, and broke into a trot following Cook. Miller quickly caught up.
Jay,
he said with what he thought of as admirable calmness,
I would appreciate it if you would tell me what you think this artifact of yours is. And while you're at it, why don't you explain why it's so important that we're not being cautious anymore?
Cook glanced at him without breaking stride, then looked away.
Jay,
Miller said again.
I need to know.
Follow,
Cook said.
Support. Instruction non-essential.
Miller snapped. All his carefully cultivated control evaporated instantly, and before either one of them knew what was happening, Miller had grabbed Cook, thrown him face down to the ground, and sat on his back, holding Cook's arms behind him.
All right, Jay,
Miller said.
Then I have to assume that the bang on your head has made you dangerous to yourself and to me. I'm going to take you back to that movie prop spaceship and tie you up while I explore the island.
Cook bucked violently. It was so sudden and so explosive that Miller was almost thrown off. It was as if Cook had released all his adrenaline at once in a superhuman effort. But Miller was bigger, stronger, and in a commanding position. He held on, and just as suddenly as Cook had begun struggling, he stopped.
Tony,
he said in a calm and reasonable voice.
Please explain errant behavior.
Of course, Jay,
Miller replied, just as reasonably.
You are acting in an irrational manner. It is not consistent with your normal behavior, and it does not match your behavior pattern as I have come to know it. I have to assume that you are suffering from a mental disorder brought on by hitting your head on a rock back on Runapuake.
Cook was silent for a minute.
Cranial area intact and unimpaired,
he said at last.
It doesn't matter.
Miller said.
Your behavior is still untenable. I have been humoring you because I thought that was the right thing to do, but you're endangering our lives now, Jay. I'm sorry. I have to tie you up.
And he stood, swung Cook across his shoulders, and started back down the trail toward the spaceship. About halfway to the ship, Cook spoke.
Return horizontal orientation,
he said.
Artifact explanation imminent.
Miller turned his head to look into Cook's face, which was hanging off his left shoulder. Cook's eyes were calm, rational, and his face was relaxed. If Cook got violent or tried to run, Miller knew he could handle him. It was probably worth a chance, if only to get Cook to realize that he was not thinking in a lucid manner.
All right,
Miller said. He put Cook down on the ground beside the path and stood above him, arms folded.
Tell me.
Cook sat and looked up at Miller.
Sit down, Tony,
he said. Miller did. Cook studied him as if trying to figure out where to start and how much to tell him.
Quit stalling,
Miller said.
Yes,
Cook said. He looked around.
Artifact is omnipresent everything,
he said.
That's a little vague, Jay.
Necessary,
Cook said.
Tell me what makes it so important,
Miller said. Cook frowned.
Searching,
he said, and his eyes glazed over.
Jay,
Miller prompted after a moment.
Ah,
Cook said at last.
Contemporary knowledge of chaos theory.
Yes, I think I've heard of it,
Miller said dryly.
Description of fundamental force, like gravity,
Cook said.
All-pervasive random nature of time and space.
I wouldn't put it in quite the same class with gravity,
Miller said. Cook nodded.
Result of artifact,
he said, and he looked pleased with himself, as if he had explained everything perfectly.
Go on,
Miller urged him. Cook frowned.
Artifact regulates, suppresses.
Suppresses gravity.
Chaos,
Cook snapped, flushing slightly.
Balances chaos of time space in a consistent linear pattern.
Miller sighed. Ugh. It was obvious that Cook had grabbed hold of a truly big notion and was far gone into insanity, no matter how reasonable he could sound at times. Maybe if you could get Cook to explain the whole thing, it would be easier to keep him calm and under control.
It sounds like a very useful object,
Miller said.
Who made it?
Unknown,
Cook replied.
What is it doing on this island?
Miller asked.
Artifact was removed from its position to prevent exploitation and or destruction by others. Unfortunate accident induced by effects of unshielded artifact caused shuttle to crash here.
Jay,
Miller said softly.
Can't you see a small problem here? The artifact lying here on this island caused the ship carrying the artifact to crash.
Cook shrugged.
Exactly. Proof. Proximity to artifact results in just such anomalies. Unavoidable.
Miller opened his mouth to speak, to point out how foolish Cook's argument sounded, but he didn't speak. Jay's reasoning was consistent with what Miller knew of schizophrenia, where every contradiction became further proof that they were out to get you. The fact that it didn't make sense proved that it was true. There was no point in arguing. The important thing was to use Cook's theories to keep him reasonable.
All right, Jay,
Miller said at last.
But something so powerful and important as your artifact will be guarded. So we need to approach it very carefully.
Agreed,
Cook said. And in less than a minute, they were walking up the trail again, Miller moving cautiously out in front and Cook trailing dutifully behind. Miller was now prepared for more surprises, or so he thought. After half a mile of quiet, unmarked by anything more dramatic than a breadfruit tree, the path suddenly widened out and opened into a large clearing. In the clearing was a village. There were perhaps 24 buildings, ranging from small huts to a grand lodge hall that could hold 100 people. It had a chimney on each end, and a small puff of smoke curled lazily from the near one. And every single building in the village was built from pieces of recovered wreckage. One hut was a section of fuselage from a DC-3, another looked to be made from a chunk of a motor yacht. A large building at the far end was made from the hull of a clipper ship. Others were knocked together from several different kinds of wreckage, making a kind of weird domestic collage. The wreckage seemed to be from every period of human history.
Incredible,
he breathed. Calling this a cargo cult was like calling the Holocaust inconvenient.
Just incredible.
Cook arrived beside him.
Circle around to right,
he urged. Miller ignored his comment.
Look at this place, Jay. It's unbelievable. How is it possible that no one has ever heard of it?
Cook gave him a pitying look.
Possibly because all ships and aircraft that come here crash,
he said. Miller just shook his head and looked at the amazing village. And as he watched, he saw movement out of the corner of his eye. He swiveled his head. A person trudged up from the stream with a bucket of water. He stared and almost forgot to stay low and out of sight. Because this person was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. And she was almost entirely naked. End of chapter.